Today is Wednesday, November 25th, 2020. This is a part two Grand Canyon oral history interview with Claire Donato, C-L-A-R-E-D-O-N-A-T-O. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Claire. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you, Tom.
Great. Claire, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
You may.
Thank you. It was a wonderful interview last time. I had no idea that a shovel handle, the span of a shovel handle, was how you used to measure the width of the trail between the juniper logs. And then I got to thinking, where were you harvesting the juniper logs?
Well, I don't really remember me actually harvesting them, but it was on the rim somewhere, you know. They were already at the blacksmith shop, and then stuff I would do would be drill the holes where the rebar was going, and maybe using the trip hammer and the coal forge to make points on one end of the rebar, and then packing them down to the spots. But they were used for water bars, not really lining the trail. Rocks were used for that.
Okay.
That I remember.
Okay. And how long were these logs, roughly?
They were about 4 feet.
Okay. So you got a drill, use a drill press, or it was just a hand drill with a bit in it?
It was just a hand drill with a bit in it.
Okay. And then you take a piece of rebar, and you got to cut that with a torch or a hacksaw.
Yeah.
And then sharpen it up.
And then stick one end in the coal forge to get it hot, and then we had a trip hammer in the blacksmith shop, which was a wonderful machine.
What does it do?
It has a foot control, and so you press down on that, and it's a big hammer, basically.
Oh.
And it hammers down, and you can just keep turning you need to get your rebar hot enough, and it'll just hammer, and you keep turning it, and you can hammer a point so that when you're nailing the juniper logs down in the trail, you have a point that makes it a little easier to hammer in.
Yeah. Was that your first introduction to kind of blacksmithing, if you will?
Yes, and I loved it.
Cool. Did you do more blacksmith kind of work there?
I did later on, because I ended up going to a horseshoeing school.
Oh, wow.
But not so much there.
Okay.
At that point in time.
But it was an introduction to hot steel and how to play with it.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it was really fun.
Cool. Would you use the punjar to pre-drill into the rocks where those pieces of rebar would go, or was it just a matter of hoping for the best that they would find some purchase?
You pretty much hope for the best, but you were pretty much, you know, in the trail, in the tread of the trail. So I don't remember having too much of a problem.
Okay.
And if we did, I think we would just move it a little bit.
Okay. All right. And so somebody up on the rim had gone out into the forest, into either the U.S. Forest Service lands, I suppose, to harvest the logs.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Okay.
And, but I wasn't part of the actual harvesting.
Okay. Is there a trick to packing logs?
Well, we had those bags that we put a lot of tools in.
Okay.
And so we would just hang them a little lower since these were longer.
Oh.
And then sort of crisscross them across the back of the mule.
So you put one end of the log in the bag, and then it's kind of sticking up in the air, and you have another one on the other side, and you kind of tie these two together?
Basically.
Okay.
We hung the bag. Usually you want, you know, your load up in a good center of gravity there on their back, but
right.
because these were long, we dropped the bags a little bit so that they would come down, and then crisscross them in the back, and then or the front, didn't matter really, but depending on how far they stuck up. You wanted, you know, if anything's hitting, it was a different learning experience here at Olympic where you have a lot more trees.
Oh, well, don't forget to tell me about that when you get there. I'm just like, longer trees. What other things were you packing from the rim down that were odd things that were like a challenge to pack?
Well, we packed all of our own gear. So, our clothes, our sleeping bags, our food, our tools. The poon jar was always fun to pack. Gas cans for the poon jar.
Okay.
You know, we had those round 5-gallon gas cans. And, I remember having two of those on one of the mules. And we came into the tunnel right before the suspension bridge. And I didn't look behind me before I entered the tunnel.
Okay.
And everything was fine, but Pete was behind me. And I remember him giving me a look like, you need to pay attention before you go into tight spaces of where your load is.
Oh.
So that stuck with me.
Hmm.
And then, of course, the suspension bridge fairly narrow.
Right.
But, yeah, so you always had to think of those things.
Yeah, yeah. And gasoline. Oh, you mentioned you were packing your gear down. Was this like if you were going to be staying at Phantom Ranch for a tour or some?
Yeah.
Is that how that worked out? Okay.
Yeah, we would stay down for 9 days, basically.
And would you pack in your food, or would the helicopter help with any of that?
No, we packed all our food.
Okay.
The only thing we didn't pack for ourselves was the grain for the mules.
Ah.
And Dave Smith did that.
What's Dave's last name?
Smith.
Smith, that's right. You mentioned him already. Yeah. So Dave would pack in the fuel for the mules, and you would pack in your own fuel to eat and
yeah.
clothing and whatnot down there for 9 days. Where were you staying on the rim?
Well, while I was at YECC, we had our own little trailer camp.
Okay.
With, you know, and everybody had their own room. When I got picked up as a seasonal, there was the old clinic that they turned into a dorm room. And so I basically had a hospital room with my own bathroom, hospital bed, which was pretty nice,
okay.
and then a community kitchen.
So these are the clinic dorms, what used to be the patients' overnight rooms if they had somebody who needed to overnight at the hospital. And then the hospital got downsized to a clinic. So those rooms with their own bathrooms got used for housing.
Yep.
What else do you remember about the clinic dorms?
They were spacious because they probably had more than one person in there when it was a clinic.
Mm.
But, it was nice. It was comfortable. The bed was nice because you could put it in all, you know, you could put it up for reading and whatnot.
Oh, it had the little, to make the knees go up and the back go up. And
yeah.
Wow. Cool. Huh.
And then the kitchen was down the hall and everybody had their own little space in the refrigerator.
Okay. Do you remember who you shared it with, that the dorm area?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I mean, there was a lot of different people and different areas of maintenance and whatnot.
Okay.
But nobody really sticks out
All right.
to me.
Housing, and so this was thinking about the timeline.
Yeah, that must have been, I don't know how long I stayed there. Eventually, I moved in with a friend of mine, Sue Updegraff.
Okay. How do you spell
And we
Sue's
had,
last name?
oh boy, Updegraff. She's Susan Boyd now. But
Okay.
she was on Trails for a little while.
All right.
Richard knows her pretty well.
Did she come in after you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was in the 82 range,
Okay.
which maybe was when we got a place together. So then I moved out of the clinic. But yeah, timeline. She eventually went back to Pennsylvania and got married, and I think that was like in the fall of 83, so.
Okay. So the hang on here. I'm trying to rattle my brain. Did you tell us how you transferred from the YCC to becoming a seasonal?
Well, I was, as a YACC, I was farmed out to Trails, and if you work out, they'll pick you up as a seasonal, and Richard picked me up. He hired me, and I don't remember if I had to do the whole application thing or not. I think I've kept all my applications. They're up in the attic somewhere.
Okay, cool. That's fun.
Yeah. Well, it's sure different now. I mean, you don't even have any
Right.
paper copies.
It's all computer based. Yeah. Okay, so that right. So that was like an 11, you mentioned it was an 11-month seasonal job with a month off. And was that like a revolving seasonal thing? Or did you have to reapply? Did you go back to Richard and say, all right, what paperwork do I need to do to come back around again?
I think, well, I know at Olympic they were able to put you on like an intermittent status
Okay.
so that you didn't have to do the application every year.
All right.
And I'm not sure if that's, I really don't remember if I had to apply every year or not.
Okay, for Grand Canyon. All right. So you mentioned how you'd started with shoveling, and then eventually the dirt packers were on leave and you got into that job. How did you advance from packing dirt to packing stuff?
Well, it was just part of the stuff. So when we would go down into the canyon for 9 days, everybody just got, everybody brought their groceries, and everybody was responsible for a meal. So you just Everybody did the packing. We packed up our groceries. We got all our stuff. So we all did the packing and then rode down.
Okay.
And usually that was the first day, was getting down there, unless our job site was fairly close to Phantom, say. We
Okay.
would stay at Indian Garden sometimes, but mostly not. We would stay at Phantom or Cottonwood or the North Rim.
What do you remember of the Phantom Bunkhouse?
I don't remember much about it. We were all in one, there was the kitchen, and then we were all in one room with beds and bunks.
Okay. All right.
And yeah, so, and that was usually, I mean, we were kind of a partying little group,
Okay.
so I can remember packing down two little pony kegs and setting up a volleyball net, and we advanced our hours like an hour earlier, so it was like 6 to 3:30.
Okay.
So we were sure off by 3:30, and after the keg sat for a day or two, we could drink beer and play volleyball in the afternoon.
Oh, because it got too shooken up on the ride down?
Yeah, it gets pretty shook up, yeah.
So it needed to calm down. Okay.
Yeah, that was delayed gratification there.
Yeah. had to be patient. You'd work for 8 or 10 hours? How did that work during the day?
Let's see. I think we worked 9-hour days, except for the last day, which was 8 hours. And that day was always just the ride out and taking care of the mules and gear.
Okay. All right. And then if you were working on the trail in the morning, you'd get up, you'd have to saddle up the mules and then ride out to where your job site was and work there. Mm-hmm. Would you take your lunch out with you?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then you'd come back, and then you'd have to take care of the animals, get them all undressed and all, you know, kind of...
And fed.
Fed, okay. And then you were on your time again.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
My time and whoever's cooking dinner, you know.
So oftentimes, well, not oftentimes, but sometimes the guys look at the woman as, well, you're the cook. Was that the case?
No, I never get that. No, I
good.
Never get that.
Cool.
When it was my turn, it was my turn. And, you know, and everybody took their turns.
So on a 9-day tour, how often would your turn come around to cook?
Well, it depended on how many of us, but there is usually probably 6 of us.
Okay.
So, you know, we would just draw straws or something. I don't remember.
Okay.
Who got extra stuff?
Okay.
Or who volunteered? For that.
Yeah, so out of 9 days, at the most you would cook twice, and it would be spread by 7 days apart, so not too terribly bad, I would imagine. The problem was, what if someone wasn't a good cook?
Well, I know I had to find out what they liked and didn't like, so I can remember making a salad, and Dan Blackwell told me all that's in a salad is lettuce and onions.
Okay.
So, as I beg to differ, but you know what? I just did lettuce and onions.
Did you? Okay. Oh my gosh. That's a little austere.
Well, I learned to eat jalapeno peppers.
Okay. Well, you could put jalapenos in with the lettuce. In.
No, you ate that, by, you know, as a side.
Okay.
You pinched on it as you ate your dinner.
Mm, all right. What else did you learn that way?
I don't know. I learned about tamales, I guess, because...
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, some of the Hopi guys would bring tamales and... Usually his mom or somebody made it, and
wow.
We'd have it on the first night.
Sweet. Yeah, I bet those were a hit.
Yep. But I don't remember a whole lot about all of that.
Okay.
I just remember it was fun. And, I mean, everything, I was just in seventh heaven with this job. It was like a dream come true.
What was your family thinking about this? Were they in seventh heaven too?
Well, you know, my mom, after 20 years of marriage, she found herself in her 40s and divorced and had to start working outside the home.
Wow.
So she ended up doing quite well for herself.
Yeah, what did she do?
She became the curator of the Waring Historical Medical Museum on the Medical University campus there in Charleston.
Wow.
And that was Dr. Waring who had started that, and she ended up writing his biography.
Oh, fun.
So she had her little claim to fame, but she was adamant about me Social Security, you know, she was a very, you know, in the future minded, needed a secure future where I was more of a here and now. But so she was happy with the federal job. She thought that was fantastic.
Cool.
But, and she knew I was riding mules, which she knew that I loved that.
Right.
But I don't think she knew the total scope of what it was I was doing. She accepted it because it was a nice federal job. Although I said, you know, it's seasonal. I could be gone at any time. You know, it wasn't a permanent position.
But she, yeah. You think she knew it was a foot in the door?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
She definitely knew that. But she was just happy I was getting, you know, a decent wage, and I was having Social Security taken out.
Good.
Because I don't know, something about 40 quarters, I don't know, I don't remember how it worked. Anyway, she knew all about that. I had to get there so I'd have at least that Social Security for my future.
mm-hmm. Good. Did she come out to the canyon to visit?
She didn't. My brother and his family did, my oldest brother. They came out to visit.
And what did you show them?
Well, probably more than they wanted to see. They had come out. I had arranged for them. They were able to stay at the clinic in an empty room. While we were on top, and then I was taking them down to Phantom for a couple of nights. And I had arranged for, I must have taken days off. I can't remember exactly how it worked because the trail crew was down there.
Okay.
And I arranged for them to take our gear down so that we just had light day packs.
Oh, wow.
To walk down.
Nice.
So, this is my brother and his wife, Rita, and their two boys, and they... Keith and Doug, and they must have been in their teens, 14, 12 maybe, 15, 13, somewhere in there.
Okay.
So we hiked down. We spent like two nights at Phantom. The boys stayed in the bunkhouse with me and the trail crew.
Okay.
And I think there was like a room in the ranger station or something, a bedroom that I was able to get for my brother.
Cool.
So we stayed down there for two nights. The second day we hiked up to Ribbon Falls.
Okay.
And then we hiked out the third day, and I had arranged for the crew to pack out our gear, which wasn't a lot of gear. We ate with the trail crew, and I mean, we just kind of needed a sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were taking our gear out, and so we just had day packs.
Nice.
So we started hiking up. The boys were in front of me, and my brother and sister-in-law were behind me. And we get up to, I don't know, into the whites of the red and white switchbacks. And here comes the Fred Harvey packer, and he's got a loose mule running around behind him. And the thing with the Fred Harvey packers was that any mule that didn't work out for the dude's string, the packers got. So they ended up getting a few unruly guys. And so if one broke off from the string, it couldn't always catch him, particularly when you're on the plateau. You might be able to corner him when you're on the trail.
Right.
But he just let him go, and, you know, they would follow, and hopefully he'd go right into the corral when he got down to Phantom. In the meantime, he was loose, and at this point, this was like March. I think in 82, but it was snow on top, so all these mules had their ice shoes on, which were basically bolts for their heels. piece of bar stock for the tow grab.
Okay.
You know, to get them through the ice on top.
Hmm.
And so, anyway, I ran into the Fred Harvey Packer, and he asked me if I had my radio with me. And I had brought the radio. I brought my keys and the radio. And he said, will you please call dispatch, because this mule has kicked one of the hikers.
Ooh. Ooh, wait. You've got, family down there? Wait, what? Hmm.
Yeah, well, this wasn't my family.
Ooh.
It was two couples, I think. And they were, I can't remember if they were going up or going down.
Oh, my.
I think they were going up. And they had stepped off to the side of the trail, but the mule just let out a kick, and he hit her in the jaw.
Oh, my gosh.
So, he had left them so that he didn't have a radio. And anyway, so I called dispatch. I got up to where they were, and she was sitting on the side of the trail. Her boyfriend was with her, and there was another couple. And I had radioed dispatch, and they were sending a helicopter. And then they radioed me back and said, the weather is deteriorating, and we need to get her. And so at first the boyfriend was going to go with her, but then they said, no, no boyfriend. And then when they actually got there, and it started snowing, and the wind had picked up. And when the helicopter actually got there, because I was staying with them, my brother and my sister-in-law still not made an appearance, and my nephews are up, you know, in front of me somewhere. So the helicopter gets there and says, we're not even taking her pack. We just want her.
Wow.
So they got her, and off they went. So now there's three people with four packs, and I just have a day pack. So I offered to take it and hike it up, and so we started hiking up, and at the top, you know, at the top of the red and whites, I think there's like a hole in the red wall there. Anyway, my nephews were sitting in there.
Oh, good for them. Yeah, there is a little kind of, not a cave, it's a little depression kind of thing there, overhang.
Yeah. So they were hanging out in there waiting for me, and I said, y'all come down here. And so they came down, and I said, the weather's going to get nasty. You need to either stay with me or, you know, stay with your parents. And in either case, you need to go tell them what you're doing. And so they were going to run down there. And I said, and if you come with me, get the car keys. So that was sort of the last I saw them. So I kind of assumed that they were staying with my brother.
Okay.
So, of course, as we're getting up, it's getting snowier and snowier, and we're starting to break trail. And, of course, the last part of the switchbacks before you top out are steep and slippery. And we're breaking trail, and I'm trying to stay with the guy that I'm, you know, the girlfriend that got flown out.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting cold because I don't have a whole lot of clothes, and I'm, you know, but as long as I'm moving, I'm fine. But I said, when we get up top, can I, you know, get in your car and warm up? Thinking my nephews are way back there with my brother.
Right.
And he said, yeah, no problem. So we get to his car, and this poor guy, anyway, it had been broken into.
Oh.
Windows had been smashed. He'd had all sorts of camera equipment stolen, and snow just covered the inside of his rig. So I said, well, I'm thinking this isn't a good place to warm up. So I left him his pack, and I said, I'm so sorry. And he goes, I'm just getting out of here. And I said, I get it. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm going to really get cold up here now.
Mm.
So I had my key, so I was going to get in the barn, at least I wouldn't be in the wind because
right.
It was pretty windy. So as I'm headed over to the barn, here come my nephews. still all full of energy and laughing and giggling. And I said, did you get the keys? And they said, yeah. So I said, all right, good. So we got in the car and turned it on and warmed it up. And so we waited. I mean, there was like about an hour, and the boys are starting to get upset, you know, that they, you know, parents haven't dropped out yet. So
yeah.
I said, let's just, you know, it's nasty weather out there. Let's just give it a chance. And I don't know, I think another hour went by, and I'm starting to get nervous now. And so I'm going, okay, give me all your clothes. So I put on as many layers as I could.
Hmm.
I was going to maybe grab a couple of mules and head down, see what was going on, thinking, well, I might lose my job. But, you know, family comes first, right? So I was trying to catch my mule, Rosie, who had icicles on her back.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, this isn't going to be fun at all. And before I could even try and catch her, here they come, topping out. And my brother hadn't seen me yet, but he saw the car running, and he started running towards the car, thinking the worst, that, you know, the snow had blocked the tailpipe and we'd all died of carbon monoxide.
Oh, no.
But we hadn't. And so, you know, I came running out of the barn going, Hank, Hank, I'm over here. And we went in, you know, the boys were fine. And Rita was fine, although a little worse for the wear. And so we all sat in the car and warmed up, and everything was good. We must have gotten something to eat that night. Went back and everybody died. Peaceful sleep. And yeah, so that was quite the adventure for all of them.
Yeah, I bet.
And me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, that was my rescue story. That's as much as I got to do.
So the woman who got kicked in the jaw, she didn't have any airway problems, or did she?
No, she just a broken jaw.
Yeah.
That I knew.
Wow.
So, I mean, and she was talking. Not well, but, you know, she was, you know, level of consciousness was good. And
okay.
She was just in pain.
And the helicopter, they've got to try to get to the rim in a snowstorm. That's got to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, well, they didn't want to take any other weight, that's for sure.
Hmm. Okay.
So, and I'm pretty sure there was a lawsuit there, but I don't know what happened about it.
Right, right. Kind of wonder. But in theory, a loose mule is a rare day.
Well, for us, that, like I said, the Fred Harvey Packer, they worked with a lot of ranked mules.
Okay.
And I didn't envy his job, actually. But sometimes you'd see them trotting their mules up the canyon just to get some wiliness out of them.
Hmm. Okay.
But they've probably changed their ways a bit now, but if they didn't work out for the dude string, they went to the packer.
Interesting. Yeah. So the poor packer would have to sort that out. Huh.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they were going down there every day, so it eventually got sorted out.
As you were working on the trails, did you get approached by hikers or backpackers seeking assistance?
No, we get more approached probably by, you know, people wanting to rent the mules.
Oh.
We didn't get too much approached. I don't remember a lot of people needing help. I would hear stories. I would see baby strollers and, you know, inappropriate footwear and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, and because it's sort of an inverted hike, you go down a little further than you want to hike up.
It's easier to go down than it is to go up. and yeah. It makes a difference.
Until you get old and decrepit, then it's not.
Well, yeah, there's that. Did you ever have a mule wreck there during that time?
Oh, I must have. Yeah, I remember Jumper fell off the wall, a wall one time, not very far down. But we had to stitch her shoulder up. Dave Smith did that. I was in on that. I broke my finger from a mule. It was the same mule, Jumper. She was new. She was the new mule, so I was leading her by herself. And it was first thing in the morning. I probably wasn't quite awake yet. And we rounded the switchback, and switchbacks can kind of give them, they have to figure that out, because you're looking at, your pal's going the opposite direction than you're going.
Right.
But anyway, she turned around, was headed back up. Well, I had my rope dallied, and I'm trying to and it's coming up over the top of me, and I'm trying to bail off, and my finger got all hung up in the reins and Chief's neck, and I got off, and I got her, and everything was fine. But I noticed that when I went to catch her, and I stuck my hand out to get the rope, that my finger was sort of laying over on the other finger. So I went, oops, that's not right. So anyway, I brought her down. We went down to the job site, and I said, I think my finger's broken. And so I can't remember if it was Peter Stanley. He goes, well, you better hike on up. And so I left my mule and hiked out, and with my hand on top of my head, it was starting to pop. But yeah, I ended up having to get pins in it.
Ooh.
And I was in a cast for a while, and I spent some time in the blacksmith shop, doing the rebar thing. And but I kept getting everything real dirty, so I'd go into the clinic, and they said, we were telling you not to use it.
So were these the pins, was that like an external fixator kind of thing, or was that an internal pinning?
It was external. I could see. And the cast was, 3/4, so it wasn't all the way around. So I could, slip my hand out of it and take, for show and tell at the bar.
Yeah, you could say, hey, look, I got some lag screws going right into my finger here. Isn't that neat?
Yeah, that's kind of what I did. And they didn't know what to do with me for light duty. I wasn't very good at the phone thing, being in the office. And then there was an accident there where one of the mules went off, and that didn't end up well. But I wanted to go on that, and they wouldn't let me.
What happened there?
I'm not sure. There was a young mule, so it was a young mule, and then she got spooked and ran up on the inside and pushed one of the older ones off, and it was a long fall.
Ooh.
So she didn't make it. But I was stuck in the office then. But they decided that there was, I think this was Richard. Richard always came up with good things, fun things to do. There was a trail building school in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Oh.
And so they sent me to that.
Oh.
And that was fun. I mean,
what did you do there? Tell me about it.
We just learned how to do different, there was a bridge building thing.
Ooh.
Not
a lot of bridges at Grand Canyon you get to build.
Right, so we were doing lots of Olympic, I'll guarantee.
Yeah, well, that was different, and you didn't know that yet, so yeah, good.
So, yeah, that was kind of fun. I still ran the Punjar again, but I just put it in the crook of my elbow. Because there is a trail building, he had his own company, so I kind of wanted to impress him in case I needed a future job with him.
I see. So broken hand and lag screws and all, here's the punjar. Okay.
I know the punjar.
Wow, they probably didn't do any studies on the ability of those little lag screws to hold those bones where they needed to be. While the person who's got all that stuff hanging off of them is running a vibratory machine like that.
Yeah, it wasn't a good thing. They sent me back down to the hand surgeon guy. And it's like staff. And I didn't want a bunch of stuff. You know, as a finger, it could be a little crooked. So he just made sure. I don't know if he replaced them. Anyway, I had to keep them longer than I was, you know, initially going to. And the next time I saw him, I remember I had pliers in my back pocket, and I said, if you don't pull these things, I am. So he pulled them. And, yeah, it's still a little crooked, but it's functional.
Yeah. What? How would you answer this question? And I don't even know quite how to answer it, but having worked with the trails people who fall in love with rocks, they can be as tough and as stubborn as their mules, especially when it comes to looking after themselves. Why is that?
I don't know. You just have to buck up and get, you know, I mean, the mule is a perfect example. They're very stoic, even if there's pain involved. And they're also will tell you when to stop. You know, there's no uncertain terms.
Okay.
Where a horse will probably try and to please you to the very end, a mule is going to draw a line. So, I don't know. It's just, you just persevere.
It kind of makes me think that, you know, if a trail crew person gets kicked in the jaw by a mule, well, they got to take care of the mule first, and they got to get the tools sorted out, and then they got to hike out this no helicopter, you know. It's a stoic. Yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah. Well, later on, this was up here, not at the canyon, I've broken a few things, but I broke my collarbone.
Okay.
And yeah, you're in the backcountry. I was on my way out, and I luckily was with somebody. But, yeah, you had to get down. You had to load the animals in the trailer. You had to drive to the barn. You had to, take care of the animals, unsaddle and feed them. And then I went to the hospital.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor. That's exactly the example I was looking for.
So, you know, it was just a broken collarbone. I could walk anyway.
Exactly. That's exactly what they say. Well, I could walk. I was fine. That's like, yeah, but, okay, did that heal up together with a big bump, or did it stay separated till this day?
No, it's healed pretty well, actually. The seatbelt drives it crazy.
Oh,
if
yeah.
I don't have to.
Yeah.
That bugs it the most.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right.
But other than that, you know, I mean, there's nothing they can really do for broken collarbone. They put you in a brace, so.
Right. And hope it sticks together and call it good then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned, too, I think that let's see, where are we time-wise? I might be able to work this out. You mentioned that Richard had gotten introduced to the river, Richard Hanson, Hanson,
mm-hmm.
and there was discussion about getting a trails trip on the river. Did you get on that trip?
I did.
Who was on it, and where did you start, and how'd you figure out what to bring, and all that stuff?
Well, I don't know how the talks and how it all came to be.
Okay.
But, and I think that was in the spring of 83.
Okay.
Anyway, he divided us up into two groups. So the part of us would do the first half, and the rest of us would do the second half. So I was on the first half, from Lee's Ferry to Phantom.
Okay.
And then we would get off, and the rest of the crew would get on from Phantom down to Diamond.
So like a 9-day tour kind of thing, or was it longer than that?
I don't know. Each one might have been 9 days.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know,
the first half might have been a 9-day tour. Because we stopped, we did a lot of work at Nankoweap, steps and stuff.
For the trail going up to the granaries?
Yeah. So, that was fun.
I bet.
And then I don't think that was the year we planted trees. I think we just basically did trail work, drainage and step building and that sort of thing.
Did you work on the Saddle Canyon Trail?
It's I don't remember.
Upstream in Nankoweap a ways, river right, goes up this steep hillside for quite a ways and then goes level into the nice little hanging canyon, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember working there. I remember Nankoweap, and I think at the Little Colorado, we went up trail, I think, and did some stuff. There were several places, although Little Colorado is below Phantom, huh?
No, it's above.
No? Okay.
The confluence there, I'm not sure.
I've done several trips, so
okay.
They kind of run together. My last one was in 2015. That was a private trip, though.
Okay. We'll want to hear all about that toward the 2015 time, but we got 15 years to get there, so we're not in a rush here. So wait a minute.
I know. but they kind of run together somewhat.
Yeah, I was thinking
that. Kim Crumbo was there. Okay. Cindy Burns, whom I loved. She was a true inspiration to me.
What do you remember about Cindy, and why was she an inspiration?
Well, she was just beautiful, and then she was cooking.
Uh-huh.
And from the cooking, she learned how to row a boat. And these are big 18-foot boats and big water, really big water for me at the time. And I just found that inspiring. And, just a happy person. And so, and she had a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Nice.
I always tried to be in her boat.
Cool. Did you, you're a swimmer. I mean, did you get a chance to say, I got my life jacket on, I'm going to swim this?
No, I didn't. Well, I'm also like a warm water person.
Ah, okay. Yes, thank you.
South Carolina, it's a lot warmer there. I mean, that was really the case when I moved up here. But no, and nobody suggested it, and I didn't think of it, but I hear that people do that through Hermit.
Yep.
Because it's just a big wave train.
Yeah.
But I never did that.
Okay. And what? So you had become familiar by then with Phantom and the Kaibab and Bright Angel Trails, and up to Ribbon Falls and that section of the canyon. What were your thoughts as you saw the area of the park upriver, that 80-some mile section upriver from Phantom Ranch?
I thought it was incredible because, I had, like, riding down to Phantom, you ride through every layer, but here you were starting, and then dropping down through each layer as it was coming up from the river. It was just very cool.
Yeah. Neat. What do you remember of Kim Crumbo?
Kim Crumbo, I remember being totally buff. I knew he was a Navy SEAL.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very serious about what he was there to do, and he pretty much intimidated me. Just his presence, I mean. But you definitely wanted to do whatever he asked of you. For me.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what I remember. And I was on several trips with him, and that didn't change much.
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting. It seems like there's a lot of that intimidation by presence at Grand Canyon, which is kind of unique in a way to that park. At least I don't get a sense that there was that much at other parks. I could be wrong.
Well, with the hierarchy of the Park Service, law enforcement, and I'm not sure if he was actual law enforcement, or, I knew he was a river ranger.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much for me, the term ranger was law enforcement.
Okay.
But that's always at the top. And then, you come on down and you get into the maintenance and you come on down. And then pretty much at the bottom of the barrel is trail crew. So, and I think that's pretty much true at most parks.
Okay. Huh. Which is funny because, without the trail crew.
Exactly.
Nothing else happens. I mean, the resource gets hurt without the trail crew.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's gotten a little better. It's a little better up here, but I don't know. Not really. Not what the law enforcement types, I don't think they appreciate the maintenance folks as much.
Yeah, sort of the unsung heroes, just who builds the buildings, who keeps them running, who builds the trails, keeps them going, who keeps the phone lines working and the electricity going and all that. So, yeah. Interesting. What else do you remember about that river trip? People or things you saw or did?
Well, the whole Nankalik just blew me away just because of the granaries.
Huh.
That was a mind blower to me.
Cool.
I mean, South Carolina girl.
Mm.
Not even used to canyons. I mean, our highest point was a sand dune. So, the whole thing, my whole Grand Canyon experience was just incredible. Everything was a learning experience. The different people, the natives, the Mexicans, it's just everything.
Cool.
Because where I came from, it was pretty much black and white. There were natives there, but not anymore. And
right.
So it was just all an incredibly enlightening, fun experience. And of course, I'm on the water again and loving it. So, and I wanted to row. And so Cindy let me row through all the, you know, she kind of gave me some instructions on rowing, and I got to do, you know, flat parts where they didn't want to do it anyway.
Cool. That's a good way to learn.
Yeah. So, I really, really enjoyed it. So I was bummed to get off at Phantom.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, no, I don't want to go.
Oh.
But I did. But I made it down another time.
Cool. We've been yakking for about 55 minutes here. Do you want to... Let's see, because you're going to do another river trip, and this is in the spring of 83. The water hasn't come up yet to terrifying levels.
No, but I did it the next year.
Yeah.
And it was still like at 40, 45.
Yeah, there was a lot of water that they had to get rid of, and more water came in 84. So those poor people at the dam.
Yeah, I think it was November of 84 that I did my next one.
Okay.
And I was at Pierce, and Richard arranged that. Richard was great in arranging fun things to do.
Oh, cool. So you had left Grand Canyon by the fall of 84.
Yeah, I had moved up here in March of 84.
Okay.
I think.
All right.
Or no, March or April. Yeah. I think I started work in April of 84.
Okay, so maybe this is good time to put a pause in this, because we'll want to know, why you decided to go, and then what that was like that summer of 84 up in Olympic, and then how'd you get back to Grand Canyon in November to do that river trip, and then about the river trip. So.
Okay.
If that sounds like, is there anything else you want to add to the area ground that you've covered before we wrap that up?
No, but there were several projects that you might find interesting that we did.
Okay.
Like in 81 and 82.
Yes, please. Yeah, okay. Should I ask about those next time then, when we start?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good. All right, well, that sounds wonderful. With that, then, this will wrap up part two, Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Claire Donato. Today is Wednesday. It's November 25th, 2020. My name is Tom Martin, and Claire, thank you so very much.
You're quite welcome.